On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we are joined by One True Nation podcast host, JP Rader. We discuss Derek Carr's comments to the media, what are reasonable expectations for the defense next season, and his grade on John Gruden so far going into year number four. Plus, we talk about John Gruden and Carr seemingly being connected at the hip, and Yannick Ngakoue talks a very big game. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto here, deep into June. I have some fantastic news for you, Soto.
Oh yeah, let's hear it.
We are just 89 days away till opening day. Allegiant Stadium, Ravens coming to town, Monday Night Football, house full of fans, 89 days away. I didn't know when I should start the official countdown. I was like,
that's
oh,
good.
It should be like
a jersey number.
Days away.
Brian Edwards. We're Brian Edwards away right now.
Exactly. We're Brian Edwards away. I'm starting the countdown now. Literally counting the days. So we're opening up and popping the doors off of Allegiant Stadium, kicking ass, taking names, going to kick the Ravens' ass. No one is going to beat us in Allegiant Stadium's home opener with fans. Bring whoever you want. Sorry, Ravens, got nothing against you. You drew the short straw.
Yeah, popping that cherry, popping Allegiant Stadium's cherry on that weekend. So I'm excited. Hopefully I can have come into some money and be able to afford that ticket. But if not, I'm going to be right next to you sitting down. I know you ain't got no money either. So
hopefully between now and then you can, dive in front of like a city work truck or something, sue Long Beach, get some money, you know, be able to do whatever it takes. I know you're willing to do whatever it takes.
I'm willing to do almost anything.
Yeah. And if you're in a wheelchair, all the better, because then we get access to the special handicap seating, which is even better. So I think we figured out how we're going to get you into that game, Soto. How we're going to get both of us.
What's this wee business? You got a mouse in your pocket or something?
No, we're gonna sacrifice your femurs, and I'll be sitting next to you. I'll be the one holding your like colostomy bag, so you'll be able to. I'll be your nurse.
I don't have to wipe my ass anymore.
Never again. Oh, never geez. Again. See. The benefits of you getting run over by a truck are just stacking up.
I can't fart anymore. I can't. Like fart out
you
of can. My butt.
You'll fart into the colostomy bag, which is hilarious. Have you ever seen someone fart into a colostomy bag?
Yeah.
It blows up like a bubble.
I don't like it.
You'll learn to love it.
At least I can watch the fart.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. You get a visual and verbal or audio.
Audio, yeah.
I don't know if it smells, though. I don't remember smelling a fart.
Oh, no. You gotta poke a hole in that mother. Which I'm not going to do.
So it was kind of a slow news week in football. So this plus Derek Carr's comments put together, which is basically like the big news of the week. Yeah. Derek Carr talked to media this week during the mandatory
pressers.
Is it technically still OTAs this week?
Because it's mandatory. It's mandatory OTAs.
So mandatory OTAs is the precise term. So, you know, there's a lot of people just like you, Soto, who irrationally hate Derek Carr.
This guy.
Hate our quarterback.
You know, people actually believe that I hate him because you keep saying it so
No,
often.
You do hate him. You've expressed him. It very clearly.
Jesus Christ.
But I'm hoping that this diatribe from our QB1, our leader, a guy that's been consistent for us for 7 years, stuck by us thick and thin, I hope this can turn you around. So the question asked, and it's a long clip, but it's out of context. It doesn't make sense. So I put the whole clip. He was asked, hey, you've got all these other quarterbacks in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, et cetera, all complaining about their franchise, their coach, their GM, their lot in life.
Their situation.
Their situation that they're in and their teams. And they're always complaining about it. And, you know, there's Derek Carr is probably top five on the list of quarterbacks with rights to complain with his.
He does have some gripes.
Defense, just absolutely atrocious. We had four different offensive coordinators in 7 years, something like that. His number one receiver the last two seasons never played. His offensive line got like basically every position got hurt except for like two last season. Like, you know, we all bitch and moan about our jobs, right? Yeah. If Derek Carr had some complaints about his jobs, be like, oh, that's a valid complaint. Like, you know, that's, I hear you, bud. I feel bad for you. Yeah. Sorry that shit happened, right? Sorry someone parked in your parking spot or your boss bitched about your TPS report, right? We've never, ever got a peep out of Derek Carr, right? Never complained, never once. Nope. And so he was asked by this media member, you know, what's up, DC? Why, you know, all these other quarterbacks complain, you never did.
I can't speak on their situations. I don't know. None of us really will know what happens in conversations behind closed doors and all that. So I can't, but I can speak for myself. And I'm of the mindset, I'm that old school mentality. I'm playing for one team and that's it. You know, I give, whether we've won enough or not, you know, I literally give every bit of energy and effort that I can to this organization. And when I sign a contract, I completely, in my mind, have to fulfill that. You know, there's, you know, I committed to that. I put my name on paper. I committed to that. And, you know, it's just how I was raised. So, again, I'm from Fresno, California, you know, born in Fresno. I mean, my dad was, you know, worked in the car business. My mom helped it, you know, substitute, you know, teaching and all different kinds of stuff at the church and all that kind of stuff. So we didn't have a whole bunch of stuff growing up. So I don't need much, you know. And so for me, it's more about loyalty. It's more about being the same guy every single day. You know, my goal, Josh, was when I got here to, you know, give everything I have to this organization, let our fans know I'm giving it all that I have, and I will always continue to do that on season, off season. And whether the situation is great or not, that's okay. People can say whatever they want. I know what I've put on film. I know the things that I've been able to accomplish, and I still want more. There's still more, and I want to do it here. I don't want to do it anywhere else. I've said it over and over again. I'd probably quit football if I had to play for somebody else. You know, I am a Raider for my entire life. I'm going to root for one team for the rest of my life, and it's the Raiders. So I just feel that so strong in my heart. You know, I don't need a perfect situation. You know, I believe that. I don't need a perfect situation to make things right. I think we can all agree that if we were able to pull it off and win a championship here, that would feel much better than just piling a whole bunch of great players together and figuring joining up and doing it that way. I think it would be much more special, and it'd feel probably a little bit better from what we've been through to where I think we're going. I just think personally that'd be a cooler story for my life. And for other people, they want to do other things. That's great. That's up to them. But for me, I'd rather go down with the ship, you know what I'm saying, if I have to. You know, that's just my personality.
So a ton to unpack there.
A lot.
From Derek Carr. What stood out to you the most?
A couple things. He talked about being an old school guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I get drafted by a team, and that's where I want to stay. I want to root for the team. You know, being from the area, I can see where he, you know, maybe rooted for both the Niners and the Raiders when he was younger, maybe the Texans because his brother played there. But that's, you know, he'd rather quit football than play anywhere else. People say that, you know, it's nice to hear. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not calling him a liar or anything, but I mean, I got to understand that that's how he feels
I believe,
right now.
I believe that Derek Carr believes it.
Right now.
I do.
His current situation.
When those words came out of his mouth, I believe him that he's like, I don't want to play anywhere else. Now,
if the situation changes and he gets traded or released or whatever, and he gets picked up, I don't think.
Does he legitimately quit?
I'm not shitting on him for that. I'm not shitting on him for that. I'm saying is, yeah, it's nice to say, but I like the sentiment that, yeah, I'm going to match the level of commitment to this franchise that the fans have.
Yeah.
Cause we've been through some lean years, man. And, mm-hmm.
If Carr thinks he's been through some shit, then talk to you and me.
Bro, don't even fucking talk. Don't start with me. And the last thing was, go down with the ship? What the fuck? I don't want to hear any of that. I'll go down with the ship. No, dude. We're going to make this fucking turn this thing around. Mm-hmm. I think he's had too many losing seasons, and he's kind of like you and I now, like, oh, fuck. You know, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, I'll go down with the ship.
Yeah.
Like, that.
I mean, he literally already has gone down with the ship. Like,
yeah,
with how many losing seasons the Raiders have had, it's like the ship's already down, you know, and Derek Carr's there with it, right?
I don't want to be picky about it, but just, you know, he's so positive about everything else, right? Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, I'll go down with the ship. If I'm like, wait a second, that's not what I want to hear.
So
it was cool to hear.
I'm so jaded and so conditioned to read between the lines. What are they actually saying? You know, so many players, coaches, GMs, even media negotiate through the media, right? They'll say something to try to get what they want. And there's no better example than this question, talking about Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, all these guys, you know, using the media, manipulating the media to get what they, Julio Jones, like the list goes on and on, right?
Yeah.
And so when I run into a Derek Carr, who hasn't given us any reason to think that what he says isn't genuine. He's never given us a reason to. He's never said one thing, did another.
No, he's pretty never
hyped up some dude, stabbed him in the back later, right? He's never done that openly as far as we can see, okay? So, you know, someone like him deserves the benefit of the doubt. But when I hear that, my natural inclination is, oh, dude, he just fucked himself the negotiation table.
Oh, yeah. I don't need much. What the fuck? Okay,
I don't need much. I'm not going to go anywhere. All right. So like when your agent sits down with the Raiders, you know, either later this season or next season, and they're going to play that clip, what can you see? On the flip side, however, in a little bit more of a positive light, how great do those words sound to John Gruden, who is Raider till he die, loves the loyalty, loves the grind.
I want guys who want to be here. You want to be a Raider?
You want to be he wants to be a Raider, right? So like this is music to John Gruden's ears. Like this is a lullaby that puts him into a peaceful sleep and a wet dream of Derek Carr throwing 6 touchdowns a game. Like this is exactly what Gruden wants to hear.
Look, Derek Carr's relationship with John Gruden, there's no bad way he can play this, okay?
Yeah.
If he turns heel on us and he's like, you know what?
I'm sick of the baby
face. I'm one of the best motherfuckers of all time. Best looking motherfuckers of all time. If he says that shit, like, dude, I'm a top 10 quarterback. I've been a top 10 quarterback. When I had the right pieces around me and continuity, I've performed and I've led this team and blah, 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 this and that. When I've had a defense, this and that, blah, blah, blah. If he turns heel and says that, you can't really deny it,
yeah.
Right? If he stays Mr. Nice Guy and does this, John Gruden loves that shit. And also, they're fucking buddies. So, I mean, there's no bad way for him to go. Because he said, you know what, man? Like, I'm a top player. If he goes to the negotiating table, right? With who? With fucking John Gruden, right? Yeah. He sits there and he's like, look, I want to be paid like a guy, you know.
The negotiation will be between Derek Carr's agent and Mike Mayock. But
the real negotiation,
right?
Yeah, the real negotiation is in the backyard over a couple of burgers and beers. Exactly. Like, hey, you know, I'm one of the top guys in the league, right? Like, I've showed, like, I run your system pretty well. I make your system look pretty good.
Like, they got lawyers to draft the contracts and figure out, you know, the little tiny details and what's like, you know, the training camp bonus and, you know, what's the
insurance policy
for injury. But when it's like, all right, John Gruden's gonna be the one that says, like, all right. 6 years, $140 million, or whatever, you know, whatever it's going to be. Like,
Jesus.
Gruden's going to make the decision. And that's what it's going to be, man. When the new salary cap comes out next season, that's going to be, it's going to be exactly like the last time Derek Carr signed his huge contract. He's going to be the highest paid player in football. We're all going to say, what the hell? And he'll be the highest paid player in football for 45 minutes. And then 7 other dudes will pass him up in contracts. And then 3 seasons, 4 seasons down the line, we're going to be like, it's a great deal.
Yeah, but in the meantime, you know, he's gonna eat up a bunch of cap when we need a lot more help.
I think we talked about this like 2 weeks ago. I believe that they will extend Derek Carr either at the end of this season or
they should.
Season.
They should.
I think they will.
They will.
When they do, I believe the exact same thing that happened this time will happen next time, where he will be roughly around the highest paid player in football. Because every single franchise quarterback that gets paid is always the highest paid player in football.
I don't know that he's going to get near Mahomes' contract. Mahomes' contract is so much bigger than everyone else's.
Mahomes' contract is fake. 10 years? Like, come on. Like, that contract's going to last 4 seasons and they're going to redo it, right? But my point is,
for more fucking money per year.
My point is, he'll get a ton of money, but I don't think it'll be disproportionate to the percentage of the cap that he's going to get, if that makes sense. Like, because the salary cap's going to go up so high in the next 2 and 3 seasons, the number's going to look nuts. But when you divide it up by, like, oh, that's still, you know, that's only 18% of the cap, 17% of the cap. Like, then it's a little bit more palatable at that point.
I feel you, dog.
I don't want to do it anywhere else. I'd quit football if I had to be anywhere else. Again, I believe that Derek Carr believes that. But if it comes down to free agency and they do let Derek Carr run his contract out, he's going to have some suitors.
He'll have a lot of suitors. I'm just being
honest. He'll have some suitors. But I don't think he'll have any suitor bigger than John Gruden and the Raiders.
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because Carr's shown, even with Gruden, Carr's shown that he doesn't perform his best a first year in a system. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago with Sanjeev. He's such a system quarterback where he needs when everything goes right, he's clicking. He's the man. Mm-hmm. And that part of that everything going right is him understanding the nuances of the offense. So that first year usually is not as good under new coordinators.
The other part that struck me, he wants to win with this crew. I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, it wouldn't be as cool to just like sign all these crazy guys. Like, I want to win with this crew. Like, it would be a much cooler story for him to take this roster, this franchise and win, as opposed to like he doesn't want to be LeBron James and just go to Miami, get, you know, Bosch and everyone to join and build a super team and win. Go to Lakers and get Anthony Davis in the most storied franchise in the NBA and win. Like, he wants to take the Raiders, his hometown team, the team that drafted him, and his crew of guys that we know love him very much and he loves very much. Like, love or hate Derek Carr, his teammates adore him. And take these guys to the promised land. And again, this does two things. One, I believe him when I believe that he believes that. And two, if you're his teammates, how fucking great does that sound? How great does that sound? The highest paid player on your team, 7-year veteran, is like, I'm going to take this crew of guys. I'm going to take this franchise. I'm going to take this coaching staff, and we can do this together. We don't need shit else. I don't need to go to, I don't need to go to Tampa Bay like Brady did. I don't need to go to Denver like Peyton Manning did. I'm going to do it here. I'm going to do it here. I'm going to win here with you guys, my soldiers.
Yeah, man, that sounds good. It puts a lot of confidence in.
That's Wolf of Wall Street. I ain't fucking leaving talk.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
If you don't, now we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out, what's wrong. We have a competent, borderline elite offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. We have a competent, previously elite in other places defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. We have award-winning assistant coaches up and down, you know, on both sides of the ball, Marinelli and Cable. So we have a lot of good coaches. We have players that we're going to see what they can do. We're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Let's hope that it's not another, oh shit moment where we find out, you know what, these guys really can't play. It's not, it wasn't Gunther. It was the guys this guy's topped out. He's not going to get much better. And we have to pivot elsewhere. Honestly, I said it before. I'll say it again. I don't give a shit about the names on the back. I don't care who's on the team. As long as they win, I'm happy. So I could care less if we get rid of these guys, cut what's his face to 10 guys that look just like him. As long as we win, I'm happy with that.
The last thing he kind of snuck in there. This is the last thing I want to bring up about his comments from Derek Carr. I know what I've put on film, and I still want more. So he kind of snuck that in between two different storylines and ideas. I think this was a subtle dig to the Juan Sotos of the world that hate Derek Carr and just kind of like, hey, not only am I loyal, not only am I going to take this team far, not only do I care about these guys, not only do I love my coach and he loves me, I'm good. I'm a good quarterback. I've got it on film. I've put great football on film. I'm not satisfied. I'm going to keep getting better, but I know what I've put on film and I know what I'm capable of.
I mean, you can look at it from that perspective, or you can look at it from the perspective of the Juan Sotos of the world are right. I do have these glaring deficiencies that I need to fix in order to be the man, not just a guy, the guy, right? And you can look at it either way. I like to look at it from my perspective, of course, because I think I'm right, that there's these big – I mean, you could talk shit all you want about the Joe Flaccos of the world and the Eli Mannings of the world. Those guys balled out when it mattered. When it mattered, they played their best. And that's what happened. You know, towards the end of the season, it's nice. I don't need you playing your best football the first 5 weeks of the season. I need you playing your best football the last 5 weeks of the season when it matters.
It's a great coincidence when the Flaccos and Mannings of the world balled out when their defense balled out and got them to the playoffs. It's a nice little coincidence. A nice part of football that Derek Carr's never really had to experience. Unfortunately for him.
Dude, it's just impossible with you.
So another thing that Derek Carr brought up, not on this presser, but he talked to Las Vegas Review-Journal's Vinny Bonsignori. And the relationship between John Gruden and Derek Carr has been a big topic of conversation, because you ask anybody outside the building, anyone outside of, you know, like the Raiders bubble, right? Like reporters who cover all 32 teams and not basically just one franchise like you and me, the same narrative, the same storyline never ends. John Gruden's got a wandering eye. John Gruden wants to change his quarterback. John Gruden's not happy with Derek Carr as QB1. John Gruden wants to move on. Every single season, that's a conversation. Not according to Carr. Derek Carr said, what people don't understand is how close we are, not just football, but off the field. Whether it's him texting videos of his dog and what they're doing, and I'm sending him videos of my kids hitting baseballs in their first game, people don't understand that, and we're going on 4 years together. But we honestly care about one another. We love one another. We grind together. He pushes me. I push him. It's a great relationship. And I told him, man, I don't want to play for anyone else. I'm playing for you. This has been the most fun playing quarterback I've ever had. Now, again, words, I'm a pessimistic guy. Word, like, you know, don't tell me, show me.
Yeah.
Derek Carr is a guy that's done everything he said, right? Doesn't say one thing, do another. Doesn't talk big about one guy, stab him in the back. So when he says things like, oh, we're like super good friends. Like we text each other videos of our kids and blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, I believe you, right? Sounds like you guys have a really, really close relationship. And we know how loyal Gruden is. He kept Paul Gunther a season and a half longer than he should have out of loyalty. There's a major issue. So between the conversations we've had about all the reasons why John Gruden isn't going to get rid of Derek Carr. He's never drafted a quarterback. He hasn't, you know, he's shown all his actions say he's keeping his quarterback. You throw this into the mix, how close they are and how loyal John Gruden is. Will this finally be a season, a Raiders football season, where the bullshit made up lazy narrative of John Gruden wants Derek Carr gone? Are we finally going to see the end of that? Is that finally going to end?
I'm not going to even say his name, but no, I don't think so. There's those type of reporters out there who just love to just run with things, even though a lot of the actions have shown otherwise. Yep. And you know, I don't think so. I think it's always good when the bad guy is good. Right.
Yeah.
Because when the bad guy is good, it's you want to see them lose. I don't care how much you love your best friend. You want to see your worst enemy get their ass kicked more than you want to see your best friend kick someone's ass. It's just the way it is. So how we're most 99.9% of us are wired. OK. And we're the bad guys. We're the black sheep. We're the ones that do things our own way. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that threw up the middle fingers to the league. And that's just who we are. And these you know, some of these reporters out there are going to just throw a bunch of shit on the wall because it's a narrative that's easy to run with. So I don't think it's going to stop.
Derek Carr was also asked about our defense because he's, you know, he's the number one offense, plays against the number one defense. So he has, you know, one of the, it's weird how like our quarterback probably has the best scouting report on our defense than anybody. You know what I mean? So he was asked about it. He's like, hey, who's standing out to you on the defense? This is what he had to say.
I know it's been today, but Yannick, my goodness. What a guy, you know, and I sit there, I'm like, he's 26 years old, you know, like, oh my goodness. You know, this is good for the Raiders. And, obviously the guys that have been here, I'll just say this as a whole. I think the whole defense looks great. I'm really excited to see what they do this season. Very, very excited to see what Coach Gus Bradley and his staff brings, because I've played against them. I know what it's like. Very excited to see what happens this year. But again, we have to go prove it. But but Yannick definitely popped today. You know, when he steps on the field, you know, there's certain guys in football where when they step on the field and they do something like that, that's a different level, you know, and he definitely has that about him.
Who's throwing around plates in the background? Did you hear that?
Is that plates or is that the jugs machine?
I don't know. It sounds like plates crashing like on a bar.
It went on throughout every single Raiders presser from that same spot. You hear that in the background. I don't know if it's the weight room or if it's the jugs machine, but
I hope it's the weight room, because that sounded impressive. Right?
That's Yannick squatting 1,000 pounds.
Jesus, someone doing deadlifts for like fucking a whole minute straight.
Thank God that's on our team.
Yeah. Right.
So it's nice to hear that Yannick Ngakoue is impressing Derek Carr. That's good to hear. I mean, that's what we brought him on for, right?
He's the quick twitch. We didn't have that. We didn't have that beat you off the line guy. We haven't had that in a while. And that was supposed to be Arden Key. He just never really got it together. And Yannick has that first step. You can't teach that. You're twitchy or you're not. And there's something to be said about being a high motor guy, like a Max Crosby. He's not that twitchy guy. He's not. No. He's the perfect technique. Let me hit the hands right at the right time, and then I'll beat you right off the snap. He's not the speed demon that Yannick is.
So Yannick, Carr spoke to the media on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, as we're recording this, is when Yannick Ngakoue spoke to the media. And he said this, and this is the headline that came out of that conversation. He's talking about how hard he's working, how hard the other guys are working, and him, and how are him and Max Crosby working. Max Crosby was our best pass rusher before. Now it's Yannick. And he said, I think that Max and myself are the best duo that is going to come hit the scene. I'm already putting that out there. Max is a hard worker. He's a guy that's putting in the work. Literally, I'm lifting weights right now, and Max is in there doing things to get better. The dedication and the commitment, I can play all day with a guy like that. So when you say things after a statement like, I'm already putting that out there, that's not you throwing that out there for...
Right. Yeah, and it's not a headline
generic
grabber.
Talk. Yeah, that's not just like, all right, I'm just like doing my time. I have to do the media. So I'm just, you know, I'm just here so I don't get fined. That's not just like, all right, here's just like what you want to hear. Here's a soundbite or two. Let's move on so I can go back to lifting these weights and being the edge rusher that we need. When you say, I'm already putting that out there, that's saying, make this a headline and mid-season come back to me and tell me how this works. Like
mark this down.
This is literally him like taking a statement, putting it in the hot take frame and putting it right on his refrigerator.
Yeah.
So again, it's all talk, right? Nothing but talk. But the fact that he's so confident about it and saying, all right, y'all, remember this. I'm putting this out there. I think we're going to be the best duo pass rushers in football. Okay, Yannick, I will keep track of that throughout this season and see if you're right or wrong.
Well, you know, it's when you have a high motor guy like Crosby and you have a twitchy guy like Yannick Ngakoue, who's going to need more of a – you typically would need more of a double team on a Yannick, a quicker guy. Mm-hmm. That's going to leave Crosby – because here's the deal. Crosby put up the numbers he put up last year, being the focus of the defensive line from the opposing
and
offenses.
And injured as hell.
And injured as fuck.
Yeah,
we talked. And Cochran was on. We talked about when I strained my rotator cuff and how I couldn't even jerk off. It was awful. It was terrible. I had to call RJ every night.
You were so miserable.
Yeah. And he played football, getting into, you know, simulated car accidents over and over and over again with a torn rotator cuff. So you have that toughness and that hard working engine, getting single covered, not being able to get chipped because the guys and the running backs on the other and the tight ends are on the other side.
Yep.
You know, and the thing is even if you double him, Nick's still fast enough to beat you anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's not out of the realm of possibility because you do have that. The last time we were able to see a lot of single coverage on Max Crosby was his rookie year when he had the best stats, I think, is because nobody knew who he was. Then now you know who he was, and he was hurt. Then his numbers dipped a little bit. Now you have Yannick on the other side taking away some of the attention and the double teams. You're gonna have a little bit, and he's healthy. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that those guys each get 10 plus sacks this year.
Who is the best pass rushing duo in football on paper right now?
Fuck.
Chase Young, Montez Sweat.
That they're good. I mean, depending on how healthy they're on Denver, they got a couple of guys there that I'm not saying their names because they're in the West, but they're
Bosa
pretty good.
Armstead, maybe.
Bosa and Armstead's good too, man.
That's a good one.
Because it is,
you know. It's a pretty bold statement.
You have Shaquille Barrett and JPP in Tampa. There's a couple out there. As far as duos, I
Robert Quinn, Khalil Mack.
Fuck, man, I don't want to fucking talk about that guy.
This is the thing though.
A couple guys in the Rams too.
Here's the real question. Let's say Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby are top three best edge rushers in football, right? They're both getting 10 sacks this season. They each got a couple defensive touchdowns. They both caused a couple fumbles. They both recovered a couple fumbles, right? Let's say they're just wrecking house, right? How much does that help our defense, assuming the rest of the defense doesn't improve? Let's say worst case scenario with the rest of the defense, they don't really improve from last season.
Okay.
Is just those two guys wrecking house, being top three duo, does that make us a top 20 defense, average defense? How much does that help? If those two guys can wreck shop.
So the two philosophies that if you want to break it down this way, the two philosophies are a good secondary makes time for the pass rush to get there, or a good pass rush makes it difficult for the quarterback, which makes the secondary better. Here's the deal.
Which is Bradley's defense to a T, right?
Who cares? As it happens, who gives a shit? Okay. Because both of them work. Whether you have a great secondary that can cover and gives your defensive line a chance to get home, that's awesome. Or you have two edge rushers who are the fucking shit and who can get to the quarterback and you put a lot of pressure on them and make them make mistakes, that's fine too. I think it for them to be considered a top three duo, they each have to get 10 to 12 sacks. So I'm thinking 25 combined sacks between the two.
And they're gonna need like
and at least five turnovers between the two.
And some like game changing moments.
The turnovers are the game changing moments.
So like as much as like, you know, we miss Khalil Mack, but like what really made him a highlight reel is when he would end games. When he would just like interception, recover, touchdown, game's over, right? Or like strip sack when they're in the 2-minute drill. You know what I mean? Yeah. Things that like mean more than the stats actually say. The stats were important and he had the stats. But I feel like if they can do something like a game changing moment, like Yannick gets a strip sack, Crosby picks it up, runs it in the end zone, something like that could really get people talking.
That's why I talked about the turnovers. That's going to be a big thing.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next, we've got our guest. He's the host of the One True Nation podcast, JP Raider. He joins us now. All right. Welcome back. Joining us now, the host of the One True Nation podcast. You can catch him every Friday, anywhere you get your podcasts. JP Raider here for the first time. How you doing, JP?
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me.
So I love it when there's slow news weeks in football because you get minor stories that turn huge. And the one giant Raider story this week was Derek Carr saying that he wouldn't play anywhere else if he got traded or released, or he wouldn't play football anywhere else. He said, he's going down with the ship. I'm going to be a Raider. This is what I want to be. This is what I want to do. I'm going to take this crew to the promised land and nowhere else. JP, your thoughts on those comments?
You know, you hear Derek Carr say these kind of things, and you wonder, you know, is he just trying to say the right thing? Is he just trying to, you know, be nice and kiss up to Raider Nation? But yeah, I tend to believe this one. I really do. I feel like he really means that. He doesn't want to. This isn't the first time he said something like this. He's said this over the past 3-4 years. I've heard something similar to this from him. He's not going to play anywhere else. So I tend to believe him. I do.
Yeah, I'm looking from the perspective of there's no wrong thing for Carr to do. If he heals out on us and is like, no, man, I'm the top 10 quarterback. Look at my stats, this and that, blah, blah, blah. You can't argue with it come contract time. If he says, you know what, I'm a Raider for life, like John Gruden wants, you do want to be a Raider. He's going to be the one he's negotiating with, you know, and all for all intents and purposes. I mean, that's right up Don Gruden's alley. What do you think about that?
No, that's definitely true. It's going to help him in any contract talks that he has, for sure, to try and say, I want to be a Raider throughout. With his contract, he could prove it, right? I mean, he got paid once. He was the highest paid for what, like a week and a half, whatever.
45 minutes or something,
something like that. So, I mean, he got his money the first time. So if he really wants to be part of Raider Nation, maybe he takes a little bit less, let the team build up around him. You know, we'll see. He can prove it with a contract.
There we go. Do a little Darren Waller contract. Just, you know, a little extra for the defense.
The Raiders stole money from Darren Waller.
Oh my God.
That would be a Tim Duncan. That would be a Tim Duncan, because he routinely took a lot less money to build that team around him.
Listen, Tom Brady did the exact same thing. This is what guys do. If he really wants to be part of this organization forever, and he wants the organization to build around him, we'll see. I mean, he says it.
I'm still convinced Robert Kraft was like sneaking Brady like stock in companies under the table just to keep him happy, keeping around.
Stocks, massage therapist.
I know Mark Davis doesn't have like multiple billion-dollar companies like some NFL owners, but maybe some way they can fandangle this in some. I don't know. Maybe get him a chunk of Allegiant Stadium. I don't know. Maybe there's something like that. They did save a lot of money this season by just completely changing up the offensive line, right? Just completely remodeled the O-line, went younger, went faster, went cheaper. So depending on who you ask, depending on your analysis, you range anywhere from, I'm very worried, they completely torpedo this offensive line, it's going to go to shit, Derek Carr's going to be on shaky legs, Josh Jacobs isn't going to run, to the most optimistic part of it, which is, I think I fall in probably the most optimistic way of it, where I'm not worried, but I think it's fair to say that there's questions and then we're going to have some answers. We're still returning Richie Incognito. Colton Miller's obviously taken off. We've heard everything good about Andre James. Leatherwood, obviously a first rounder. So I'm not worried, but I think they do have to answer for themselves. Where do you fall on that spectrum of our O-line?
No, I'm definitely with you guys. The first week I found you guys, this actually was a topic of yours. And I'm right in line with where you guys are at on it. I keep hearing over and over and over again that the Raiders are rebuilding the offensive line, right? Or totally dismantled it. And that dismantled it drives me absolutely insane. It really does. Yeah. It is not a dismantle when the guys that are no longer here, for the most part, didn't really play all that often over the past couple of years, with the exception of Rodney Hudson. That one hurts.
Yeah.
Obviously that one hurts, but they don't make a move like that. They don't make a move like that if they don't think Andre James can play. So they've seen him for 3 years. They know what he is. They know what he is more than any of us know what he is. If they seem to be fine with him, why should we not be fine with the idea of him being there? And then if he doesn't work out, they brought in
Nick Martin.
Nick Martin, thank you. They brought in Nick Martin, so he's our baseline, right? Nick Martin's a good pass blocker. He can get the job done if needed. I hope he doesn't need to.
He was ranked above average. So
he's all right. I hope Andre James takes that job, because if Andre James takes that job, you know that he's better than Nick Martin. If he's better than Nick Martin, we're in good shape.
Yeah, sounds good. You know, there's a lot of talk too about whether Rodney Hudson wanted to be there or not, and I shut that down. Like, dude, he had a contract. like whether he wants to be there, he's not a quarterback. He's not forcing his way out of anywhere. He's going to show up. He's an offensive lineman. He's got to be there. Right. I'm really encouraged by Andre James' game that he played. He did muff a couple of snaps. I think that's more with repetition, but he made the line calls. He made all the calls. He had all the same responsibilities that Hudson had. And that's a really big plus for me as far as the offensive line goes.
Yeah. With Andre James, the only time that he got to play right was his rookie season. He came in as a tackle in college and was thrown into the center position. You know, way a million years ago, I played right tackle, backup center. I know what that's like to be thrown in there and have to do exactly that. Now, granted, not at the same level, obviously, but still, it's
higher
not
level.
It's
played a higher level, JP. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyways,
football Space Jam version.
Yeah. But it's you know, that's not an easy transition to do for anybody. So it's a, you know, you can give him a little bit of a break. He's a rookie, and then he's playing out of position, really coming in as a tackle and learning how to play center. And he still did. He did all right. I mean, he made some mistakes.
He didn't blow obviously. Any calls. He didn't blow any right. blocking scheme calls, which is the most important thing for me, I think.
I agree. He did all right. He did all right. And that was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He knows.
Plus Tom Capel.
Yes. Yes. And honestly, Carr. You know, don't forget Carr in this, you know, when you're talking about the offensive line, you watch Derek Carr before every play, right? And he's making the defense show him what they're going to do. And then he adjusts the protection to be able to chip and pick up and help out. He's the reason that offensive line looked so good last year, because they had nobody playing last year. I mean, you look at what Kansas City did with Patrick Mahomes in there, who doesn't do what Derek Carr does when it comes to reading the defense prior to the snap. And adjusting and making the right, putting the right people in the right position, right? Mahomes does everything else better. Don't yeah. misread what I'm trying to say here, right? But there, it is a real thing that Derek Carr makes the offensive line better. And as long as Derek Carr's the quarterback, our offensive line is going to be fine.
What do you make of the off season in general, because we saw Bill Barnwell of ESPN rank all the, you know, the off seasons. I'm sure you saw, and it was 32 out of 30. Like the Texans had a better off season. You're saying the Packers had a better off season. You're saying like you got quarterbacks begging to get out of these franchises. You're like, oh no, they're better off than the Raiders. Is this just media narrative that loves to dump on the Raiders, or am I missing something?
No, I think you're spot on that one, especially when it comes to ESPN. I mean, this is a long time process for them of just banging on the Raiders. And, and for over the past couple of years, it looked like, you know, maybe they weren't right. And then at the end of the year, when the depth of the roster really started to show itself, they ended up being right. Right. To say that the Raiders had the worst offseason in the league this year, I mean, it's borderline disgraceful, to be honest with you. You look at every position that the Raiders made themselves better at every position, with the exception of center.
Center.
Yeah, right? With the exception of center. But you look across this roster, not just at the starters, but at the depth of the roster. Remember, this offseason was all about depth as far as I was concerned, right? Over the last 2 years, the Raiders started strong and faded late. You fade late because of injuries, and the depth of your roster starts to show. They now have someone to play at every position as a backup who could step in and play for the first time since early 2000s. Not saying that this team is as good as the early 2000s team, but this is the first time that this roster has that kind of depth. The first time that I can remember them having this kind of depth since then.
Well, the depth also, it pushes the starters like, hey man, if I don't go out there, I can be a training camp warrior all I want. I can be a training camp all pro. If when the lights come on, the pads come on, and the TVs flicker on, if I don't perform, someone's taking my job, and it's not going to be a slow process. So that's that depth that you speak of. It really helps everyone up their game.
No, I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, think of all like the first rounders we've got that we picked up free agents to push him. Damon Arnett, you're not guaranteed to be a starter. Jonathan Abram, you're not guaranteed to be a starter. Even Leatherwood, like I think it's his job to lose, but
for sure,
you know, they're keeping these tackles to try to push them, and they're adding dudes. Like,
well, keep an eye on John Simpson, man. If John Simpson plays well at guard, they're going to move good over to tackle.
We've got like 8 defensive tackles, right? Like, they're pushing.
I will say I'm not excited about the idea of Good being a tackle. I think that's part of why PFF's ranking on him last year was as low as it was, because when he was playing guard, he was as good as anyone else we had. But when they kicked him outside, he was definitely out of position. You could definitely see it on passing plays when they didn't chip on his side. You could definitely see the issues he was having out there. So that scares me a little bit, the idea of Good on the outside, but you know, they got Young back, and Young played banged up all last year. He held it down all right. He wasn't fantastic out there, but he was banged up. If he's healthy this year as a backup, I love him. Love him as a backup.
So obviously, you know, the defense has been the major issue for the Raiders for, like, obviously the last few seasons, but since like the last 20 years, it's been a major, major issue for the Raiders. We've been talking about forever. Like, that's not just a Paul Gunther problem. Like, they were terrible before Paul Gunther got there. They got worse with Paul Gunther, but they were terrible before that. It's asking a lot of Gus Bradley to turn this into a top 10 defense or even an above average defense. Hell, if they're just slightly below average, I'm shooting fireworks off in my house. Like, this is like, that's great. Like, when we were the 20th worst defense in 2016, we went to the playoffs, right? Like, are the ingredients there roster wise for Gus Bradley? Let me ask that question a different way. What ingredients is the best this defense can be with the ingredients we have under Gus Bradley?
With the ingredients that we have right now, with the upgrades that have been made at the free safety position, with the question marks that are still the slot position in my mind, I was excited about the idea of Casey Hayward possibly kicking inside until I heard that interview of his last week. He wants no part of inside. You can hear that in his voice. And I think that would create even more issues trying to stick him in there. So with the issues that I still see in the slot position, we're probably looking middle of the pack. I think that free safety upgrade is a huge deal. I mean, in my mind, you know, 70% of the problems we had last year, we had because of that free safety position, because, you know, Eric Harris just couldn't get there. And, you know, I couldn't even get there, let alone try and make a play on it. He wasn't good enough to even get to the ball to make a tackle, to the ball to try and knock it down. He was, and that's, you know, a lot of Jonathan Abram's issues. When you watch the film and you watch Jonathan Abram, a lot of the time he looked to be cheating towards Eric Harris to try and help him out, and then getting beat on the opposite side. Now, you know, maybe I'm reading into what I'm seeing a little too much, but that safety position, you know, as little as the safety seems to make with the number of tackles a free safety makes or the number of times they break up a pass, but the amount of difference that's going to make on this team, it's night and day. So middle of the pack defense, if Hobbs can step in and play decent as a slot corner, better than Joyner played last year, just above middle. I don't want to put him top 10. I can't imagine this defense being a top 10.
Oh my God. If we're even above average, JP, if we're like 14th, that is a freaking, that is a grand slam for Gus Bradley's like coordinator of the year award. If
How can he
pull that off, like that would be. So we've had in the last 30 years, we've had a top 10 defense twice.
Wow.
In
that's a crazy
30 seasons, top 10 twice.
That's a crazy
sniffing the teens. I will erect a statue in my living room for Gus Bradley. Like, that would be, and that's why I said this off season when they were doing their defensive coordinator search, I was like, if I'm a defensive coordinator anywhere, I am banging down the door trying to be the defensive coordinator for the Raiders, because you're picking up Paul Gunther's pieces, which is a historically bad defense. Not just bad, historically bad defense. Yeah. The Raiders give up more points than they ever had in the entire history of the franchise, right? Yeah. You have nowhere to go but up. You have nowhere to go but improve. And you get to take all the credit for all those improvements. So, and luckily we got you know, there's Gus Bradley was probably my top three guys that we'd want. He's obviously proven that he can lead a very good defense, but between just having not Paul Gunther and all these young guys just kind of, you know, being 1 year better, free safety, all our high priced free agents, kind of hoping it was a Paul Gunther problem, right? Corey Littleton, Nick Witowski, like hopefully it was Gunther's problem and not them problem. I mean, it's impossible to be like optimistic based on our history, but like the ingredients seem to be there if they can all just kind of align correctly.
Look, there's definitely talent on this defense. There's no doubt about it. We've got guys who can get to the quarterback and Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue and Solomon Thomas playing that three technique instead of being kicked outside where he was with the Niners. That's going to be a huge difference for him. He's going to be bringing pressure from the middle. That amount of pressure is going to make that secondary look better. I mean, you know, there's a reason why Al Davis had the saying, right? The quarterback must go down and he must go down hard. There's a reason why I'd love it too. I use it in my show every now and again. It's probably going to make its way in there this week, but there's a reason why he said that, right? It was true. What was that? Late 70s, early 80s when he said it. It was true then. It's true now. You put pressure on a quarterback and they will play bad. When the opposing quarterback plays bad, the whole team plays bad. It makes it easier to win, but you got to hit them. You got to knock them down. Mm-hmm. And we haven't done that. And we haven't done that for a handful of reasons, right? We didn't have the guys getting pressure. We didn't have the guys on the back end covering long enough to let the pressure get there. So it was a combined issue. On the back end last year, you had the outside corners doing a good job for the most part. You had safety issues all over the place. You had slot issues all over the place, right? That safety issue is taken care of. I'm not at all, between Gillespie and Merrick, I'm not at all concerned about our free safety at all, right? That slot position still a little concerning. Pass rush wise, man, they're tenfold better this year than they were last year, pass rush wise.
Yeah,
this defense is going to be better. There's no doubt.
Yannick said that him and Crosby are going to be the best duo, yeah. And to mark it down, they're the best duo pass rushers in the
putting
NFL.
That out there, mark it down. It's like, okay,
Are you guys reading Farrell not involved in that? That's what I got out of that.
Farrell's not a pass rusher.
Well, but you know what I'm saying, though? He's saying that they're the bookends.
Yep. I mean, he's not wrong.
So Farrell's not the starter?
I think what they'll do is they'll do Farrell on the outside on running downs and then Farrell on the inside on passing downs.
I was thinking that too.
That would be my – because he is a really good run stopper.
And, yeah, he's like, very good on the
he is legit run. There. I got to give him credit.
He's better than people think at rushing a passer too. He really is. He just doesn't finish. And I think, you know, I look at how this team's going to play and what Gus is going to do. And, you know, I see him kicking Farrell over to the other side, right? Letting Yannick come. Let Farrell go against the right tackles.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier.
Huge deal. I think it's going to be a huge deal.
We're talking about what Yannick can do for Max Crosby. Max Crosby performed the way he did last year, being the focus of the defensive line. From the opposing offenses, and he was hurt. And so, I mean, him getting single covered, not getting those chips because they're going the other side, it's going to be a big deal for him, having that high motor guy on one end and a quick twitchy guy on the other. I mean, if you look at the four, if you look at Farrell and Thomas in the middle, Yannick and Max Crosby, that's almost a NASCAR-esque pass rush on passing downs.
Seriously, that's really nice on passing downs. That's really nice. And then, you know, don't forget about the draft pick either. Malcolm Kuntz, I think, is going to get there when used sparingly, right? Mm-hmm. As a pure pass rush specialist, spelling Yannick Ngakoue every now and again, he's going to get there. He's got all the moves. He's going to get there.
So I ask you this next question, JP, very open-ended, because I don't want to infiltrate your thought process and move you in a direction.
I wonder what he's going to ask.
I want pure what your take is in your own way by whatever you mean. Right. Well, however you think this should be answered, you answer it in your way. What do you make of John Gruden?
All right. That's not the question I was expecting.
I was expecting something else too.
Curveball.
I was going to get that personal. Wait till the second time you're on the show. Then we'll get to the hard questions.
I look at what John Gruden has done over the course of his first few years, this second stint, as a I know people are down on him because, you know, you look at the overall record, it has not been great. But you look at the wide receivers that he had playing in that first year. The fact that they got first downs was amazing,
yeah.
Right? And then you look what the progress that was made in that his second year, and then the progress that was made again in the third year when, right, Terrell Williams went down, Henry Ruggs went down, Bryan Edwards went down, and he's still running up points and running up points and running up points. Now, granted, right, they get into the red zone and things fall apart. How much of that is a lack of trust in that defense and trying to run the clock out a little more than they should just to keep that defense off the field because it's as bad as it was, right?
I thought about that way, maybe.
So I'm a big Gruden fan. I really am. I loved the idea of him coming back. I've liked what I've seen. I would love to love what I've seen, but we're not there yet, right?
Yeah.
We get a little postseason action this year. I'll love his return.
I think what gets me about Gruden is he certainly deserves criticisms for plenty of things, but he doesn't take criticism for what he deserves criticism for. And I don't think he's given credit for things he gets credit for. Like you said, to be able to turn, he's had his number one wide receiver not play a down in back-to-back seasons. Terrell Williams gone, Antonio Brown gone, him and Derek Carr turned Nelson Aguilar into a $28 million wide receiver. Seriously. Nelson Aguilar, who came in.
Nelson pass, Aguilar. Right?
He's stealing money.
who couldn't like, catch the flu.
Nelly Never Drop was what we wanted to call him. Like he turned Aguilar into something special, right?
Yep.
I think his play calling is fantastic. I think the offense he runs is fantastic. I think he's an atrocious talent evaluator. I think that's
been pointed out by enough people now. That's just accepted at this point, that's
a major issue. Hopefully Mayock can get in his ear enough to be able to make those decisions. His play calling can be a little predictable, but it's still effective.
So as long as it's
getting yards and hopefully getting points and winning in the red zone, he'll be fine.
Look, I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, telling people, you know, we're going to jam it right down your throat and then lining up and jamming it right down their throat.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that. Yeah. It's predictable sometimes. There's no doubt about it, but there's a toughness to his offense that he brings it's a much tougher offense than your typical West Coast offense. It's a down your throat kind of off.
It's the perfect Raiders offense because even though it's a West Coast offense, I've looked at a lot of film, there's deep shots built into almost every single play. So yes. If you slip up just a little bit and Carr sees it, that ball's going. Yep. And I think now with a little bit more comfort with the receivers and hopefully they stay healthy. Those deep shots are going to be a little bit more often.
Yep. So I would agree with that.
So the down part about all this is, we got a great offense to look forward to. Hopefully a defense that should be much improved. We're playing the NFC East, which is always nice. Get a couple easy wins, which is always good.
Maybe. And you're like, we struggle on that East Coast sometimes. We only have
true two East Coast games though, that's right? True. Like, one of them's after a bye. So
travel
schedule's not that bad compared to
what we also. We also struggle against really good defenses, and that's what the NFC East is full of. Yeah, they don't have very much in the way of offense from what I've seen. I haven't finished my scout on the whole AFC East yet, but they don't have great offenses over there at this point, with the exception of maybe Dallas, right?
Yeah.
Dallas is the opposite.
Yeah.
Their offense is killer, but their defense is nothing.
If only they can have some of their wide receivers play end, you know what I mean? Yeah. but the downside of all this is, have you seen the ticket prices for the Raiders this season? Of the top 10 most expensive resale tickets
on the secondary market. Yeah, it's
8 of them are Raider games.
Yeah.
8 of them. The Cincinnati Bengals are a top 10 ticket because they're playing the Raiders.
I mean, you had to expect that, right? I mean, it's a beautiful new stadium. Nobody got a chance to look at it last year. So you had to expect it was going to be that way. I've told, you know, all of my Raider all my Raider buddies out here, right? They've all, when you're going to Vegas, I told them, I'm looking 4 or 5 years out. I am. I'm not going to be able to afford to do it before that.
When I'm able to donate a kidney. That's when I'll go to some games.
Yeah, we
had it all planned out at the beginning of the show. We're going to have Soto jump in front of a city vehicle,
his
legs taken out so we can sue,
and then
he'll be in a wheelchair so we'll get better seating.
Oh, I love it.
We got it all planned out.
Invite me, please.
Hopefully.
Sounds great.
You could push him. I'll film it. Season tickets.
Don't film it.
PSL? No problem. We're set.
Outstanding.
All right, his name's JP Raider from the One True Nation Raider podcast. Every Friday, you can check it anywhere that you get your podcast. JP, this was great. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, JP. That was fantastic. Let's do some What Up Windbags.
I'm first ready.
Kay Kessner. Interesting math that Kay Kessner uses. Devontae Booker signed a 2-year, $5.5 million contract. So Kenyon Drake just needs to be twice as good as our previous backup to make that contract make sense. So
I get what he's saying.
Logically, right? If like every dollar you pay is you want X number of yards, right? For every dollar I pay, I want 7.8 rushing yards or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah. But this is the problem, is it's not a linear pay scale.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're like, you could be twice as good as Devontae Booker, but still you should only be making 20% more than him, if that makes sense, because that's just how the running back market goes. So again, Kenyon Drake signing him for the $11 million, whatever it is for 2 years that we did, bad contract, overpaid, no question about it. But that's something that sucks during the off season and something that you don't really care about too much during the season.
Yeah.
I would have been more than happy to keep Devontae Booker, to be honest. I don't know if I understand why the Raiders let him go, because good for him. Happy for you, Devontae, getting $5.5 million.
Yeah, good.
As a backup running back, great. You know, awesome.
But the thing is, you can't look at Drake as a backup running back, because Devontae Booker was a backup running back. That's what he was. That's what he's going to be from now on, and that's that. Yeah. Drake is not that. Drake is not going. He's more like a 1A type back, because he does a lot of different things. He does things that are a little bit different and a little bit better than Booker can do. So I don't really see that as a fair comparison, because I think Drake is going to eat a lot of more non-injury snaps from Jacobs that Booker. Booker took he was spelling basically Booker was in there to spell Drake, or to spell Jacobs. Drake's going to be in there because he has specific packages built just for him. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. Dick Vitale, isn't he the president of your fan club, Soto?
He is.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I thought the name looked familiar. Soto, let me give you some homework. Who was the leading tackler for the Raiders last year? I'll help you out. You can Google it. And I call bullshit on this guy wouldn't start on half the teams in the league. The first player mentioned on the defense by pretty much every coach and player on this guy. I assume he's talking about Jonathan Abram, correct?
Yeah, and depending on where you look, I looked at a couple different sites, and it could be either Kwiatkowski and Littleton were tied for the lead in tackles, or Abram was tied for the lead in tackles. But the thing we have to realize here is we have to stop looking at our team and comparing them to each other. We have to compare them to the rest of the league. So I did some more homework, and on PFF said that Abram was the highest, the leading tackler on the Raiders last year. He was like 90, 91 in the league. Mm-hmm. So on average, every team in the NFL had three players that had more tackles than our highest tackling player. Mm-hmm. And he was like 35th among safeties. So, I mean, it's like, you know, you have a shit sandwich and you're excited because you find a piece of steak. Like, come on, guys. This whole commitment to excellence thing. We can't just look at our defense and Abram in a bubble and say, okay, here's our leading tackler. we got to keep them. No, everybody, there's a reason why Bradley said that both safety spots are wide open competition. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that say about Abram and Joseph? They, who you have a ton of tape on? I don't know, yeah. But it's wide open for a reason.
Last one, Fernando Cabanillas.
Cabanillas.
We were talking about John Gruden. Is he a good play caller? That was one of our segments. And so Fernando asks, when has John Gruden's offenses ever been great? So you're asking that sarcastically, but I'm going to give you that actual answer. And the reason why I wanted to answer this question specifically is because I was wondering, Soto, was I over-romanticizing John Gruden's old offenses? Was I remembering, you know, the Oakland from, you know, late 90s, early 2000s? Obviously, you know, we went to the Super Bowl, went to the playoffs, but our defense was pretty good back then, right? For the rare instance when the defense actually showed up, yeah. Right? I'm like, am I over-romanticizing our offenses? Do I look back at Gruden's offenses both in Tampa Bay and in Oakland and say, all right, they were way better than I remember? So I went back. In rankings, 1999, his second year in Oakland. I said second year, give him a year as head coach. And they were ranked eighth in points. Next season, they were third in points. Next season, they're the Super Bowl year 2001, fourth in points. 8-3-4. Top five twice in 4 years as head coach. Pretty damn good, right? The Tampa Bay years, they weren't good at all. 18th in 2002, 18th in points, 2003, 18th, 23rd, 20th, 31st in points, 18th, 19th. So the Tampa Bay years, they weren't good because he never really got his quarterback, right? He found Rich Gannon in Oakland. He stumbled on Derek Carr here in Las Vegas. Never that good. And then last year, of course, we were 10th. We were top 10 in points. So that's the thing is when John Gruden gets his quarterback, when Gruden gets his quarterback, Rich Gannon crushes it. When he gets his quarterback and they find their stroke, Derek Carr, well, not as good as back then, but still really well.
One thing, too, is, you know, fucking Gannon had Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers across the all-time Raiders across his offensive line, and he had Tim Brown. He had, you know. Wheatley and Kaufman, and you know, he had a bunch of weapons out there, Rice, you know, for a couple of years. So, I mean, he had players. He had guys that we don't have right now.
And he didn't have like a 10-year plan either, too. So, like, I think in Oakland, you know,
he's a fire under his ass.
Yeah, like first time being a head coach, and he's like, all right, let's make this happen now. And but like you said, he had the pieces there as well.
Runs this hybrid West Coast offense. It's a West Coast offense, so it's a short pass offense with deep shots built in almost every single play. And I don't think that it's always been one or the other up until John Gruden took over the play calling with the Raiders when he started head coaching there. Is, you know, it was a different type of offense where, okay, you have to watch the slants, watch the hitches, watch the crosses. Oh, yeah. Watch the deep passes too.
But the big thing though, in both stints with the Raiders, the offense basically got better every season, which I think is looking forward. That's the big one. Cause if we can look back on Raiders, John Gruden's first three,
man, Derek Carr on the brain.
I know, man, I got my low blood sugar or something. Did I not? Maybe it's cause I'm sober. I don't have a beer, but if you look back on each time is his first stint with the Raiders, second stint with the Raiders, the offense improved every season. Cause we have this desire to judge players, coaches, teams, human beings in general on what you've done for us so far, right? Like, which is fair, right? What's your history say? That's how we're going to gauge your future. But we always got to remember that we're not our past. We're what we're going to do in the future. And even though the past kind of tells us what we're going to, you know, give us an idea of what we're going to see from you moving forward, the trend that John Gruden's offenses as a Raider head coach always got better spells good things. Like if our offense gets even better this season, which there's no reason to think why we could be a top five offense. Definitely. Definitely can be a top five offense. Like we could hang with Green Bay and Kansas City just offensive wise. If we do that and Gus Bradley gets our defense just slightly worse than average, We're definitely throwing you in front of that bus so we can get tickets to some games. I'm willing to make that sacrifice. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to the Autumn Windbag. We really appreciate it. Thank you to JP Raider for joining us as well. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube page. Check it out. We got extra content on there, and you get to see our beautiful mugs. Win-win. Until next time. Later.